Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. Throughout this series, created in partnership with Coutts, I will be speaking to senior experts, thought leaders, and influencers from the worlds of travel, architecture, investment, consumer goods, and more, as we examine how we can embed purpose and sustainability into our everyday lives. From responsible investment to electric vehicles to eco-conservation, we will explore the new technology, partnerships, and initiatives helping us all to lead cleaner and greener lives. My guest today is Rhianne Mary Thomas, Chief Executive at the Green Finance Institute. She is also chair of their Coalition for the Energy Efficiency of Buildings. Rhianne Mary was previously the global head of green banking at Barclays and the founder and chair of Barclays Green Banking Council. She has helped create the national conversation around green finance by groups including the UK Government Green Finance Task Force, the UN Environment Programme Principles for Responsible Banking, and the Commission for Carbon Charging. In 2016 and 2017, she was ranked in the Financial Times Outstanding Global Executive LGBT Allies list. In 2019, Rhianne Mary was awarded an OBE for services to green banking. Welcome, Rhianne Mary.
Thank you very much, Paul.
I want to start our conversation about the importance of green real estate in the UK and beyond. So can you tell us why you believe it is so vital to decarbonize the UK's building stock and what level of investment will be needed to do so?
Well, Paul, I'm going to assume that the Conduit audience doesn't need any further convincing of why it is so vital to decarbonize our whole economy in order to mitigate the threat of climate breakdown. So against that target, we need to look at our building stock. And the UK Green Buildings Council, they report that operational use of all UK buildings account for around 30% of our total greenhouse gas emissions. What's more, the Committee on Climate Change, they report that energy use in our homes, that accounts for 14% of emissions. And that needs to fall by 24% by 2030 in order for us to stay on track with our carbon budgets in the UK. And so you asked what level of investment is needed for us to get there. Well, at the moment, the average rating of energy performance certificates for UK homes is EPC D. And the government has set a target for domestic energy efficiency of reaching EPC C by 2035 in as many homes as possible. Government's own estimate is that's going to require about £65 billion in order to meet that important 2035 target, which of course is just a milestone on the path to getting net zero carbon 2050.
So how, if you kind of put this in the kind of overall context of seeking to achieve our goal of not exceeding 1.5 degrees, how cardinal and central is this challenge to that? Where does it rank in the overall effort? Just so that we have a sort of order of magnitude sense of how much we should be focusing on this, both as ordinary citizens, but also from a policy and from a finance perspective.
Oh, Paul, it's absolutely key. In the UK right now, the transport sector is the largest sector in terms of emission, closely followed by our homes. So unless we actually decarbonize our homes, we will not get to net zero carbon by 2050. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so that focuses the mind. And with that in mind, can you tell us why the Green Finance Institute established the Coalition for Energy Efficiency of Buildings, and what is and what are those coalition's goals?
So the Green Finance Institute, our mandate is to mobilize capital towards a net zero carbon and resilient economy. And we're executing that mandate by focusing on specific sectors and then bringing experts together to identify the barriers to deploying finance and working together to design the financial solutions, as well as the enabling policy, regulatory and data requirements to make it happen. We've started with buildings as one of our big flagship projects because it's obviously a key challenge in the UK's clean growth strategies. But also, the technologies are mostly already available, and yet we don't really have the creative financing ideas today to really help accelerate that transition. So we felt it was an important place to start in our first year. We were only established last July. To really create a template. And we're very excited moving into our second year to announce that we are going to be replicating the work we've done looking at decarbonisation of road transport. So our goals, our short-term goals on both buildings and transport are to work with the practitioners and the policymakers to bring to market really viable commercial financial solutions that generate acceptable risk-adjusted returns for mainstream financial players, so that we can then start channeling that private capital where we need it to go. Local solutions for retrofitting homes, and in due course, we're going to be looking at heating homes as well, commercial buildings, SMEs, and as I said, start looking at how we actually channel that capital towards the infrastructure needed for a net zero carbon transport system as well.
So tell us, what exciting or interesting or innovative collaborations are you seeing between the public and the private sectors to collaborate in order to achieve some of these zero carbon building goals?
Well, obviously, I'm going to say one of the most exciting collaborations is our Coalition for Energy Efficient Buildings, given that we are funded by government and the City of London Corporation. But we actually, what we do is convene the policymakers and the private sector, as well as academics, civil society, and a whole bunch of other experts and practitioners in order to help us design or co-design these solutions. But it would be a wasted opportunity not to give a shout out to one of our projects that we are supporting under the SEAB, and that is the Valuers Project, which is a collection of industry partners led by Monmouthshire Building Society back home in Wales, who are working with the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, Rightmove, and the zero carbon home builder and sustainable energy service provider, Cero, who sit on our steering committee. As part of that project, new green mortgages and additional borrowing products will be made available to some pilot areas in Tondrev Island in Cardiff, as well as some existing homes looking to make retrofit energy improvements. And what's exciting about this is that it's actually going to be one of the first mortgage lenders in the UK to adopt the findings from a previous piece of research known as the Lenders Project, which adapts affordability calculations to more accurately reflect actual home energy bills, which could potentially increase the maximum affordable mortgage by up to about £12,000 for a very low energy home compared to a poorly performing property. And Rightmove will also be bringing green information to its surveyor comparator tool. And so that's going to draw on those energy performance certificates I previously mentioned and other energy efficiency information to support surveyors as they compare and value green features in homes. And the public part of this, as well as having the Green Finance Institute involved, is this project is funded by the Department for Business, Energy, Industrial Strategy. So a really good example of using public funds to help with the feasibility and the capacity building of a private-led collaborative effort.
So that sounds extraordinarily promising. I'm always interested in trying to understand the barriers to scaling, and given the urgency of this issue that you've, you know, so clearly articulated and the necessity of addressing it as you have, what do you think are the barriers or the impediments to making these financial instruments more widely available so as to be able to accelerate this transition?
Paul, that goes to the heart of what we're trying to do with our coalition, which is identify exactly, working with practitioners, what are those barriers? And they're different for every sector, they're different for every tenure. We're already encountering a number of them. One of the barriers I've observed for replicating successful pilot projects and scaling them is that quite often success is down to the inspirational leadership and tenacity of some exceptional individuals, which is clearly not a terribly replicable model. So actually one of the pieces of work that we're doing for all 20 of the projects that our coalition members have put forward is very much doing a forensic analysis of what are the enabling factors that are making these projects be successful, so that we have a constant focus on scale. And then there are obviously some very pragmatic barriers that get in the way in terms of data, in terms of familiarity with the sector, in terms of confidence that the returns are there, all of which are leading us to think about doing these demonstration projects so that we can demonstrate to those that are able to channel capital at scale that this is a great opportunity for investment.
So can you tell us what the benefits or potential benefits for sovereign green bonds are when it comes to accelerating green real estate in particular?
Well, with respect to greening real estate, there could be a really obvious application of the funds towards retrofitting social housing or alleviating fuel poverty for those less able to pay. And like the Chancellor's summer statement, which was obviously very positive with regards to financing the retrofitting of homes, it could provide another strong signal of the government's commitment to transitioning the housing stock to net zero, which would importantly lead to more investment in the skills and the supply chain within the construction and building industry, which is something that's desperately needed if we are to meet those housing targets.
So in addition to green sovereign bond issuance, what other steps would you like to see the government take to support the financing of retrofits and the green finance agenda more broadly?
Well, Paul, I'd like to use this opportunity and this platform that you've kindly given me to speak to Conduit members to float the idea of a national investment bank. So I think in the aftermath of COVID, as we look to the need to finance different sectors, to look at productivity, to look at levelling up, now is the time for us to make a real case for the government to set up a new national investment bank that would have at its heart a green mandate. We all know that in order to kickstart the economy and prosperity in the UK, there is absolutely no sense in investing in things that will end up being stranded assets. So the two things are inherently linked. So I do think having a new institution with a clear mandate to support the acceleration of green finance towards real economy outcomes like retrofitting, but also like infrastructure for electric vehicle charging, for biodiversity, for nature net gain, so many areas. This is an institution that would be used to help provide risk mitigation for the private sector and commercial finance. It could address technology and early deployment risks. It could address construction risk for large complex projects. It could provide long-term finance and liquidity. Again, that's very challenging for the private sector due to capital constraints or concerns about economic conditions. And it could look at to aggregate projects and portfolios by developing innovative securitization structures, which could then importantly mobilize institutional investments towards the sort of smaller local projects and solutions that are going to be key if we're going to be successful in our transition.
So this would be like an infrastructure bank of the kind that we've seen evolve, but with a particular green lens or overlay or a sustainable overlay superimposed on top of it.
I think that's right. An infrastructure bank, a development bank, one that is specifically set up to help us accelerate the transition and importantly to crowd in private finance by providing the right risk mitigation tools.
I look forward to it being established and for the initiation thereof to have happened today. How much of this is about sort of clever marketing or sort of getting this across to kind of ordinary consumers / homeowners? Because, you know, I regard myself as, you know, extraordinarily attuned to these sorts of things. And it doesn't seem intuitive to me, which I think it really should be for almost everyone, that as you walk into your home and as you approach a hot summer or a cold winter, you say, my gosh, there is this easy to access, not particularly complicated, intuitive to understand financial instrument that makes good economic sense for myself and my family that I can avail myself of in order to improve the energy efficiency of my house. Something which will be beneficial both to my pocketbook and to the environment. It seems that some sort of simple consumer level marketing is something that we've not yet managed to roll out in a widespread way. And is that a kind of a chicken and egg that you've got to have the product to have the marketing, but you're not really going to be able to get the product to be widespread until you market it so that people take it? You know, help me think that one through.
Paul, I think that's a really good question. When we look at things like installing double glazing into our homes, that has become a social norm. And it's become a social norm, not just because of the accessibility of finance, but because we trust the installers, we're familiar with it as a technology. And all of these are barriers to some of the additional retrofitting measures that we need to do in order to make our homes energy efficient and over time generate heat in a net zero carbon way. And so one of the projects that we're doing to address this head on is looking to replicate the digital building renovation passports that we've seen work successfully in other jurisdictions. And these effectively provide guidance to the homeowner of all the different retrofit actions they can take on their home in the right sequence so that they can actually figure out how they take their home from having a low energy performance certificate today to the standards that will be expected in future. And when that's done well, a digital passport also links you to the finance facilities that can be available to make this as seamless and easy as possible. And whilst I'm at it, I'll also talk about the trust mark that was launched by the government a few years ago. And this is directly in response to concerns by consumers about making sure that when these retrofits are done, they are done by properly accredited installers and that they are being done to the appropriate standards. Because that, again, was being held up as a barrier, as an issue for people who are putting unfamiliar new technologies into their homes.
I mean, that just sounds extremely consumer-friendly, easy and intuitive. So you move into a new home, you open up the digital passport, they say, here are the 20 things that should be done in a home in order to give it a high energy performance rating. 5 have been done because it's in the passport. The following 15 need to be done, ideally in this sequence. And you can click a little box over here in order to get this done, which can connect you to both providers and sources of finance in order to get that done.
That's the vision.
I want to ask about the UK government's recent announcements in this field, particularly in relation to improving energy efficiency but in buildings, but also in the context of building back better in response to the coronavirus pandemic. You know, obviously, all of us are very interested in ensuring we emerge from this crisis better equipped to tackle a challenge which is as or if not of greater existential import than the pandemic, which is, you know, the looming threat of the climate crisis. So can you give us a little bit of a sense of recent announcements, your sense of whether they are fit for purpose and are making a helpful contribution to the issues that you care about and are working on?
Well, obviously, the most pertinent recent announcement that relates to the work that we're doing on energy efficiency of buildings is the Green Home Grant that was made available to landlords that the Chancellor announced just last week. So landlords will receive up to £5,000 to cover 2/3 of eligible retrofit project costs. From our perspective, we obviously see there's a huge opportunity to combine that with private sources of finance, which could support a total retrofit investment far above £3 billion, sort of the £2 billion grant and a third of private contribution of £1 billion, as landlords then seek additional finance to complete deeper retrofits. And this is really a very important area to focus on because the private rental sector is a growing sector. It's increased from, I think it was 13% or so in 2007 of all homes to almost 20% in 2017. And the highest incidence of fuel poverty, something like 900,000 households, are within this private rented sector. Only 28% of those homes meet the required EPCC standard that we mentioned. And we know that over time, or our expectation over time, is that those minimum energy standards will tighten. So this is clearly an area of focus. And to your earlier point, Paul, about the importance of messaging and marketing, 94% of landlords by volume are individuals. And so many of them are potentially less aware of energy efficiency and the retrofit journey and what needs to be done, as well as the likely tightening of standards over time. So what's really important, and we and many of our coalition members were very positive in response to the announcements last week, but they really do need to be the beginning of a long-term signal in this sector. We've seen other finance schemes that have just not provided that long-term signalling previously. The Green Deal, which gets mentioned, which was not particularly successful, and the Landlord's Energy Savings Allowance that was then withdrawn. What we really need to see is that these announcements now in this response to COVID, they are the start of a long-term signal that provides that certainty and the ability for the private sector to innovate and support through co-financing.
So I want to now kind of drill down as we begin to draw to a close, just on advice to individual homeowners and the things that you can do to make your home more energy efficient or greener. Could you just sort of whip out a little bit of a laundry list just so that people can kind of intuitively get a handle on the tasks to be done?
I'm more than happy to do that. I'm also going to caveat it with being a banker and certainly not being a qualified professional for retrofit. But luckily, there are PAS 2035 retrofit coordinators that are out there that meet government standards, and they'll ensure that your retrofit is suitable for your property and that the technologies will complement each other over the longer term. But in terms of what technologies are out there, the sort of tried and tested technologies are obviously wall and roof insulation, double glazed windows, lighting upgrades to LED, and then obviously solar photovoltaics. And then we have emerging technologies. Mostly to do with heat pumps, so air source, ground source, or hybrid heat pumps. And then also the sort of more innovative end, looking at how you can use smart energy system in your homes, optimizing digital, making sure that your car charging and battery systems are integrated, as well as things like having solar roof tiles. So really far more interesting things that we can do to our homes rather than replace another granite kitchen worktop.
Great. Final question is, in the kind of school of you can't manage what you can't measure, is there evidence that suggests that if you install an energy counter or you do a sort of smart version thereof, which can give you a sense of energy use per room or per time of day or per appliance, that just the simple act of observation, of being aware of things that silently draw energy that you might otherwise not be aware of, is that also in your mind part of the solution?
That's a great question, and actually something that we should integrate into some of the consumer survey work that we're doing. At the moment, what we're trying to do, because we're looking at the finance, is identifying through research what are the best retrofit measures you can do to maintain the value of your home as a defensive measure. Because obviously there are lots of different parameters into how a home is valued. But we think, given that standards will be tightening, clearly understanding what are the things that will optimize that defensive measure to maintain that valuation is important. But you're quite right, there's a huge consumer behavior angle here. And certainly I think that's something that we should look into more, whether actually by measuring and raising people's awareness of the energy that they're using, whether that in itself will curb energy usage.
So having listened to this really fascinating conversation, I'm sure there are many of you who are wondering how to enhance the energy performance of your home. So here are a few simple steps. First, if you don't know how efficient your home is, go and find out. Second, get in touch with a retrofitter. There are many businesses out there now that can help you retrofit your home in a more sustainable way. And the payoffs in economic terms are surprisingly beneficial. Also, keep an eye out for the updates on the government's Green Home Grant scheme, which incentivizes all of us to make our homes more energy efficient. I found this to be a classic conduit conversation, precise, filled with useful tips, going from the specific to the general and looking at policy and then setting out a vision for a broader set of systemic transformations that seem not only necessary, but also in an optimistic vein, eminently achievable and entirely possible. And I think that is no small part due to your work and the work of these very important endeavors that you have set up. So thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the work of the Green Finance Institute, and we shall follow your work with enthusiasm in the months and years to come.
Thank you very much, Paul. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on Coutts and their recommendations for a sustainable lifestyle, please visit coutts.com/conduit conversations. For more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.